Hello, everyone, and welcome to our one-night show. Just take a seat. They're always free. This is Every Pod You Cast, a podcast dedicated to the rock band The Police. My name is Justin Mancini. I am one of your co-hosts here. You may know me from the Cinema Joes podcast, as well as Pod on the Rooftops, a podcast dedicated to the rock band Genesis, as well as Podwork Angels' The Rush Hour, dedicated to the rock band Rush. And joining me, he is the co-host of Podwork Angels. He's also a walking disaster. He's the demolition man, Chris Mancini. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Justin. How are
you? I hope I did you justice.
I'll take it. Does that leave you as the Omega Man?
Actually, I was going to leave that for Randy, but you got a little bit ahead of me there. But yes, he is the host of the Media Lit podcast, and he's the if I'm getting my notes correctly here, he's the Omega Man. It's Randy Elaine. Hello, Randy.
Justin, it's great to see you. I am hungry for podcasting with you, but I will not be sucking anyone's blood. We're going to keep it nice and clean.
This is a podcast. I know it may surprise you to learn. This is a podcast where we discuss each of the Police's 5 studio albums, discussing our overall thoughts, the songs we like, the songs we don't, our favorite lyrics, and our favorite musical moments. And today, we are tackling the Police's 4th effort, which is Ghost in the Machine from 1981. This one's going to be interesting to discuss. It is one of the more divisive albums I've found. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of the album itself, I'm going to offer a little bit of history, as I like to do. So the last that we had left them, the Police had just put out Zenyatta Mandata. They were probably as big as a band could be at this point. They were selling out stadiums, at the same time running out of gas and really putting a lot of strain on their marriages. There's a lot of tension, not just between the members of the band, but between their spouses, as I mentioned. And they even even at this point, Stewart would lament the fact that, you know, it wasn't the same as playing in the clubs when they really had to prove that they deserved to be there. Now it was kind of like everyone just kind of it was just kind of a given for everybody else. So he didn't feel like they had more to prove, but they still had some money to make. So when they decided to do another album, they had a lot more flexibility on Ghost in the Machine than they had on Zenyatta Mandata. They had a lot more time to put it together, and they would go record at a studio in Montserrat in the British West Indies, recorded at a studio called Air, which was actually founded by George Martin, the longtime collaborator of the Beatles. And this gave them a lot of freedom. It also gave them a lot of room to fight and bicker. They would work with Hugh Padgham, who is a producer best known for his work with Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel. He's certainly a name that I have seen many a time, being a fan of both of those artists. He also did something that was a little bit novel for them, which was he got the members to record in different parts of the studio in different rooms. Like, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, I believe Stewart was in the dining room with his drum kit. So they really were in different places, but also they could hear each other. So it created this sort of live feel to the music, or at least that's what Padgham was going for. As I mentioned, there was a lot of tension on this album, even compared with previous albums. This is really a moment where Andy and Stewart have expressed that they felt like the true power trio that they had achieved was really being lost, and that Sting was really starting to take over, and his word was seemed a lot better with the studio and with the record company. A&M actually deferred to Sting when it came to selecting their first single. They had thought maybe it was going to be Omega Man, and it ended up being Invisible Sun, which I find fascinating, as opposed to Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic, which ended up being their second single on the album. So yeah, Omega Man had to settle for third. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea of what was happening with the members of the band at this point. The title of the album comes from this book that Sting was reading, of course, A Book of Philosophy by Arthur Koestler. You really can, if you look into the lyrics of this album, you start to see the themes of that book really figuring into the music a lot more prominently than maybe you might be led to expect, especially on the first song of the album, Spirits in the Material World. And this is a very political album for them. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. It's very questioning in some ways. It's very earnest in other ways. I think that was what surprised me on this go around. And as I mentioned at the top, this is a very divisive album. I've heard some fans who say it's the best album that Police did. Others are a lot less sold on it. But I am curious what my co-hosts think, because I'm actually not 100% sure how they feel about it. So I'm going to start with Randy for your thoughts on Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah, this album is definitely an enigma. Overall, I am pretty high on it. I really enjoy it. There are a ton of tracks that I loved. I both had a difficult time picking my favorite song and a difficult time picking my least favorite song. At the same time, I did feel like I was missing something that I really loved about the Police up to this point. And I think what I'd say is maybe it's possibly too polished in some ways. Like, there weren't as many weird little oddball surprises and things like that that I really enjoyed on those first albums. I also spent a little time doing some, you know, armchair Wikipedia on the Ghost in the Machine book that you mentioned earlier, Justin. And, you know, without actually reading it or digging into it, I was kind of fascinated by this notion in the book that people both want to be part of something larger and simultaneously they want to be individuals, and that can lead to all sorts of tension. So we get little nods to all sorts of different tension in the world. And while I'm not going to sit here and say I'm adopting the philosophy of the Ghost in the Machine, it does mean a lot to me to examine our world and look at where and how we could be better to one another. So there are so many lyrics across this album that speak to me and mean a lot to me. So partly feel like I'm missing something, and partly feel like it's my favorite album lyrically up to this point. But overall, I'm really high on it, and I'm really glad it's part of the discography.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I like that you elucidated a little more about Ghost in the Machine and how that figures into this album. You know, I think it's also interesting just with the way that so much of the album is about trying to look past these sort of the arbitrariness of politics and like to what really makes us human. And that is definitely a big part of that book. And certainly something that Sting honestly would talk about for a lot of his career, not just with the Police. So that's a really good observation. But Chris, how do you feel about this album?
Yeah, I definitely agree that maybe the most thought-provoking lyrics compared to the first three albums. So I agree with you, Randy, there. Yeah, it's very different from other albums, but I feel like it still works. Like, despite all the experimentation, the synth sax and horns that are heavily prominent on this album, and despite the fact that the guitar maybe takes a back seat, a lot of the songs still work. And I can't say there was a single song that I would skip on the album, and maybe there are one or two that I found on the previous albums. That said, it does have that less reggae rock feel to it than maybe some of the past albums. It's still there, but maybe a little more hidden. And then, like, you can kind of tell, like, in listening to it, you can tell, and maybe also like researching it, but you could really feel like the band was butting heads on a bunch of stuff. And I'm wondering if that was another reason that they stuck them in different rooms, because that was the only way they're gonna get this thing out. Although I think they have a little bit more time than the last album. I think 6 weeks instead of 4 weeks or something like that. But that said, yeah, I still feel like it's a really strong album, despite like it being very different, I feel, than the first three.
Yeah, I definitely feel like this is the most dynamic change between albums that we've gotten so far. I mean, Zenyatta Mandata did feel like a little bit of a transition from Regatta, but I mean, I feel like any punk that we had is just completely gone. That's just, and maybe there's a part of me that really misses that energy. You know, I one of the reasons I love The Police so much is because the way they marry different genres, including punk and straight up rock, with things like reggae, with things like jazz. And here I do feel like there is that bit that's kind of missing. This might be the album I'm the most ambivalent about, but I still feel overall positive on it. I agree with you, Chris. I do think you could feel that tension on the album. And honestly, there are parts of it that to me feel like Sting doing a sort of proof of concept for his eventual solo career. There are a lot more elements in terms of production here. You've got more keyboards than ever before. You've got the sax played by Sting himself, which I didn't realize until looking into this album a little bit more. I assume they just hired a bunch of, you know, studio session musicians to do that. You've got piano by Jean Roussel on Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic, in addition to, I believe he also plays keys and I want to say clavinet on that song. So they're really like adding a lot. There's a lot more accoutrement to this album, but maybe the downside of that is it does feel to me like the band is a bit out of balance. The idea of this as a power trio, I kind of agree with Andy and Stuart that things were not quite as well balanced as they were before. And I will say also, I feel like to me, maybe the middle of this album is where it's a little more repetitive than I would like. I think I would agree with you, Chris, though, where I wouldn't necessarily skip any of these songs, but maybe there's a reason why the first couple of times that I listened to this album, the middle of the album really started to run together for me, and I had a hard time distinguishing certain songs. So yeah, I kind of feel now that I do think there are classics on this album, and for me, they're like the beginning and the end of the album. That to me is like where it's, at least for me, is where it's the strongest. But overall, still positive on this. I don't think this is a bad album. I think it is trying new things, and I have to give them credit for that. You know, they're not repeating themselves, which is a good thing. But it does feel like maybe some things are missing, and maybe there's, you know, there's always room for experimentation. It's just a question of where you go with it. And if you, you know, manage to bring something new that feels fresh or that feels like, you know, the fullest realization of itself. And I don't know if this quite gets to that level for me, but I still think it's pretty good. And there's some really fascinating stuff on it. I don't think you would want to, I would not tell someone who was getting into The Police to skip this album, despite some of my ambivalence about it. So I think that's where I'm at with this one.
I'm so glad that I have the two of you here to help guide me through this process. Because there is some basic research I didn't think to do. And I did not realize that Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic was not the first single off of this album. Yeah, I did not. It's not my top pick, even though I love the song. But it's wild to me because it's so clearly the song in terms of the singles. So that just fully blows my mind. I'm also happy to report, based on your discussion there, I think we are much less likely to swap our favorite and least favorite songs. So,
oh, also, I did want to correct myself by saying Omega Man was not the third single. It was indeed Spirits in the Material World. And actually, Secret Journey was the fourth. And now I'm wondering if I maybe misread something and if Omega Man was ever released as a single, which I can't seem to find a record of. So
I was going to say, I thought Spirits in the Material World was one of them. So
yeah,
I was just going to say, I was surprised that they would ever let Andy have that, with that being one of his tracks.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Sting even sung for the song.
Yeah, there were a lot of egos, a lot of clashing egos. Not that that's a new thing to The Police, but it seemed to really come to a head on this album.
My name is Anthony Desiato. When I was 5 years old, I stood in front of a comic shop advertising The Death of Superman in its window display. That moment outside Heroes World set me on a path, a lifelong fan journey leading directly from that tattered red cape to my podcast series, Digging for Kryptonite. Each week, we mine Superman's vast 85-year mythology across media with thoughtful discussions about the stories that have shaped the Man of Steel in film, TV, animation, and of course, the comics that started it all. Join us on Digging for Kryptonite every Tuesday, wherever you get podcasts. And for those of you interested in exploring the classic George Reeves television show, please check out our sister series, another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman, an episode-by-episode rewatch podcast. And remember, it's about what you do. It's about action.
Hey there, this is Aaron.
And this is Josh.
And we're the hosts of the Anniversary Brothers podcast.
The podcast where we talk about the anniversaries of your favorite TV shows and movies.
Including the ones you forgot existed.
Ugh, especially the ones you forgot existed.
And the ones that make you feel old for remembering.
Ugh, those ones are my favorite.
Episodes drop every other Thursday on the Pop Break podcast feed.
Don't you forget it.
So please join us for two trips down memory lane every month.
And we'll see you soon.
So guys, let's get into it. Let's get into some of the songs. Do our Love You Since I Knew You category. This is where we talk about songs that we think are either underrated or just that we would like to highlight. And Chris, I'm going to start with you. Where would you like to take us for your Love You Since I Knew You?
Yeah, I'm going to go a little unexpected and go with Hungry for You as my love track. Just a downright fun, funky song. I realize it can be a little repetitive, but I think what helps break up that repetition is the drumming on the song. Really dynamic in the song. And I love the back and forth between the horns and the bass. Kind of have that back and forth throughout the song. But yeah, some silly lyrics and supposedly, like, I don't know how good Sting's accent is. I don't speak French, so I can't speak to that, but it does sound like pretty harsh. Definitely is like amusing to listen to if you don't know like what it translates to. I started to look at some of the translation and I was like, okay, this is this seems extremely silly and like not to be taken very seriously, but I think it works well with the song. And yeah, I guess I can't quite pinpoint it, but it's one of those songs where like I could put it on repeat and not get bored of it, which is pretty crazy considering like, I'll admit it feels repetitive, but like, yeah, like I said, I could have it on loop and I'd still be grooving to it. So it's one that definitely stuck out early for me when I first heard the album growing up, and it's still speaks to me even now.
Yes. I'm really glad to hear your pick for this, Chris. We were actually, Randy was not privy to this, but Chris and I were talking off air, and I told Chris, I can't hear this song without hearing him singing it. And apparently Chris had no memory of how he used to sing it when we were younger. You know, and as Chris usually does, quite emphatically, usually a lot of emphasis on the consonants, in such a way that is guaranteed to stick in your memory banks. So I almost, when I think of the song, I think more of Chris singing it than Sting singing it. That's the point that it got to. So I did just want to mention that. But also, I just love the fact that, you know, you kind of alluded to it before, Randy, about some of the lyrics. And, you know, I want to drink your blood is one of them. And there is something about hearing the lyrics in French that makes it feel a lot classier than it really is. And I think that's a deliberate calculation on Sting's part. And something I found quite funny once I read the actual lyrics. You know, all these years, I assumed the lyrics were, you know, lascivious in some way. I didn't realize how extreme they were. And I did find that pretty amusing. In some ways, I was thinking like, you know, some of this is bordering on like Cannibal Corpse type of lyrics, but it's in French, so it's okay. So I did also just want to mention that, but yeah, a very fun song for sure.
Yeah, if Google Translate can be trusted, this is definitely the horniest Police song. Want you until I'm dry, but our bodies are all wet was something Google Translate gave to me. So if that's even close to accurate, there's something going on here. And of course, you ravaged my heart and I drank your blood. You were picturing Chris singing the song. And I was picturing this as Sting's audition for David Lynch's Dune. I was like, yep, this is the song that a guy would sing who was about to be licking a knife in a David Lynch movie. And it was kind of perfect. I do want to say, Chris, this wasn't at the top of my list, but I do really enjoy this song. So I could not be more thrilled that you picked it. because it's almost hypnotic in a way. I love the syncopation of the lyrics, the way that they're paced out. There is something that really draws you into this song. It's a ton of fun. Thank you for picking it.
My pleasure. And I won't attempt to sing it here.
Well, we're not going to get any French out of me, but I am going to go next. And I'm going to go to the Andy Summers composition. I'm going to Omega Man, a song that I quite liked on this listen through. I don't know. Does it work as a single? I don't think it works as well, maybe, as the ones that they went with. But that's not as important to me as the song quality itself. So honestly, I feel like this is a song that has everything I tend to like from the Police. It's got an eeriness to it. It's got a propulsiveness to it, an extremely catchy chorus, and an awesome guitar solo from Andy, which is a little bit different than things he's done before. You know, this is kind of like, I was looking at these lyrics and they don't necessarily lend themselves to easy interpretation. But the sense that I get is this is about someone who is alone in a world that is full of life. There are many, many references to life around him, to voices, to television, to all these things that are around him. And this is kind of someone who's on the precipice of maybe joining it or at least contemplating it. I think the song has this weird, nervous energy. You've got this really active bass line, but then also this single hanging synthesizer note throughout it, through the verse section. And it really feels like this tension that's about to be exploded. That's the sense I get from it. And then it kind of is by the chorus, which has really fantastic support from Stewart's drums. And then Sting sings it. So it's not just, I'm the Omega Man. It really sounds like, oh, Mega Man. So at times it just sounds like he's saying Mega Man, which I love. I don't know if that was, I don't think a Mega Man was invented yet, but you know, that does make me very happy. And then the guitar solo that I mentioned is like this combination of the anxiety, but also this earnest excitement that's combined. And I like that it's both very fast, but very contained at the same time. And I just think that's a great reflection of the song that is kind of about loneliness, but also kind of about like maybe wanting to verge into the world of the living. It's just a fascinating song and one that I think deserves a lot more credit, certainly than Sting gave it.
Yeah, this song was kind of off my radar. Somehow, when I transferred music over to my phone, I lost the song and honestly hadn't heard it in a long, long time. So it's kind of weird to like hear a Police song that I, you know, haven't heard and listen to it for the first time, or what feels like for the first time. But yeah, I think the guitar is really what like sells the song for me, really drives the whole song forward. And like you mentioned, the solo is really cool, but also contained within the song itself. So yeah, it was a treat to listen to and hear something that I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, once again, I could not be more thrilled with your pick, Justin. Omega Man was in contention for my top pick, so now I feel kind of relieved that I can, you know, go with a different one. But I'm gonna make the bold statement that I think the song has the best lyrics on the album. I think Andy outdid our guy Sting in this one. I found the imagery like more poetic and engaging. And yeah, I'll admit the sort of the darker edge of the song hit me a little bit harder. But I think once again, I'm being influenced by that Andy Summers documentary I love to bring up on every single episode. Right. Because like we're at this point where he and his wife have recently split. And the way he described himself on tour, it really sounded like he was isolating himself, like, put me in a car, get me to my hotel, I'm going to kind of shut myself away. So like, yeah, to see him having lyrics like, the sky's alive with turned on television sets, I walk the streets and seek another vision, yet the echo makes me turn to see that last frontier, the edge of time closes down as I disappear. So someone disappearing into himself. Yeah, something really hit me with that. Fantastic choice.
Well, I'm curious about your fantastic choice, Randy, for this category now.
Yeah, totally. As I mentioned, loved your choice of Omega Man. It gave me like some slightly older, more classic rock vibes. I think that was what I liked about it. But my pick is going to be something that had a sound that felt a little more contemporary to me, or at least ahead of where previous Police albums were, and that's Invisible Sun. I really love the whole vibe and energy around this entire track. There's something about it that makes me think a little bit about the Pixies, which is one of my favorite bands of all time. I don't know exactly what it is. I think it's definitely partly just the fact that we have like some counting in the song, and it makes me think of Monkey Gone to Heaven. But there's this almost like pulsating sort of energy to it. Like I can feel the energy of this sun that might be fueling us. Where's this hope being drawn from? And I really loved it. You know, I said maybe Andy takes the lyrical trophy from Sting on this one. But that imagery of like factory smoke and like acetylene light from welding torches, and this sort of like artificial heat, but then also something more emotional. That it hits me on an emotional level. It's like it's a cool song, and it's one of the ones I found myself most likely to replay. You know, I love to vibe with a song.
Yeah, I'm glad. I should have put money on this because this was the one I was going to guess for you. I know it's not as impressive when I say it after the fact, if I didn't write it down anywhere. But this is a song that, to be honest, when I first heard it, I think it was on the greatest hits. And I remember when I first heard it, I was like, what is this? This doesn't sound like the Police. Like, this sounds like kind of boring and slow. And why is he counting in the first part of it? What is going on? And as years have gone by, and especially recently, I've really like become a fan of this one. I think it is like it's this like weird like throbbing to it. It's very dark, and at the same time, the whole point of the song is that there's hope, you know, in the midst of all this. And I know this was a song that I think was meant to be universal, I think, in a lot of ways, but I know was very inspired by the Troubles at the time. I don't think we've talked yet about the Troubles in the various historical events we've managed to talk about on this podcast. This was a period of sectarian violence in Northern Ireland between Protestants and Catholics. The British had a vested interest in supporting the Protestants due to a long, long history of religious division and colonialism in that part of Ireland. And, these were times, and it might be hard to envision living the times we do now, where a lot of these people were living in like basically militaristic zones, and there wasn't a lot of hope. And I know he also was very conscious of the hunger strikes that IRA prisoners, who were not given the status of political prisoner in prison, they were just thrown in regular prisons and then went on these hunger strikes to try to do something. And unfortunately, a lot of them ended up dying as a result. But Sting was thinking like there has to be something driving these people. And it obviously meant enough for him to write a song about it and to make it very dark, but also ultimately about hope, or at least about the human, you know, need for it. And that's isn't that hopeful, at least, even if the sun is not waiting for us, that there's still this hope within us. I mean, yeah, there's a lot going on here. Another great Andy guitar solo, very chaotic and really stands out from the rest of the song. Just a lot going on here, and really fascinating following this after Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. Really interesting, and I think really inspired placement there.
Yeah, we mentioned, guitar kind of taking a back seat. It's funny going from like Omega Man to this, where like I feel like the guitar is most prominent in. Similar to what Justin said, this song took a bit for me to sink my teeth into. And I think the guitar is kind of what ultimately like sold the song for me. Is it gets a really interesting tone in the chorus that really like makes you feel this invisible sun, kind of earthy feel to it that gives the contrast to the, you know, rest of the song. And then the parts in the bridge and the outro where it kind of has a pleading guitar sound makes it really interesting. And yeah, so those parts of it, I think, like, has helped me grow into the song. So interesting pick there.
Like, maybe the darkest song on the album, even though there's a song called Darkness on this album. So that's saying something. But let's move on, shall we, to our King of Pain. This is where we talk about songs that maybe are not our favorite, songs that, you know, maybe don't work for us as well as some of the ones that we've spotlighted. So I'm actually going to go first on this one because, again, you know, I was thinking about this. I was like, you know, I don't know if King of Pain, at least for me, is an accurate term to describe the songs that I've chosen so far. Maybe more like a King of Mild Annoyance. Pain seems like a pretty strong word to use for some of these, which maybe speaks to the quality of the stuff that the Police put out. But I'm going to go with, so I told Chris off air that I was kind of between two songs and ended up going with the one that I was leaning more toward. And that is a certain part of the song, which is One World, Not Three. It's that sax part, which, boy, do they play it a whole heck of a lot. I have to be honest, the sax doesn't work, sometimes works for me in this album. Other times I find it a little bit grating. I can't imagine how Andy and Stewart must have felt about it. You know, he's really going for it. And yeah, we get this like four note thing that just plays throughout this whole song. And I don't know, it is a case where I'm like, okay, better settle in because we're going to be hearing it. You know, we're going to be hearing it quite a lot. I think it's being used more like percussion here, but I think it's more distracting in some ways that I'm not even sure it's meant to be. The song is one of the more earnest ones on the album, and I think it just ends up feeling a little bit too pat in some ways, as a result. It really is the sax part. There's things I do like about the song. It's very bouncy. Again, there is an earnestness, which maybe, you know, can be a little bit infectious at times. But yeah, it's just that four note sax riff, which just is a little bit, I'm just like, okay, I'm once the song is over, I'm like, good, moving on. Like, let's go on to the next song. So yeah, again, another qualified King of Pain for me, but you know, that's been my MO throughout this podcast.
That song was in consideration for me too. I think what saved it is the drumming on it is really cool. Yeah, I didn't mind the sax as much on that one, but to kind of jump into mine, I went sure. with Rehumanize Yourself, the one before it. And similar to your reason, Justin, I went with the main reason being the unnerving sax/horns in the song that are kind of like chaotic. I don't think it's really that bad. It's just, I don't know, it just kind of stands out when it's played and you're like, I don't know, doesn't really feel, give you a good feeling. And then I would say the other thing is like, none of the other playing like stands out as much to me as some of the other songs surrounding it. So ultimately that's how I picked that one. But again, it's not a song that I would necessarily skip.
That's one of the ones that starts to blend together a little bit. I did like it a little bit more this time just because, I don't know, there's like a weird kind of energy to it. And it's calling out a lot of, like, especially fascism in the UK at the time. He makes a reference to the National Front, which, for those who don't know, is a unabashedly fascist, you know, political party, which has been more in vogue lately, which should be troubling to everybody. And I just kind of love that Sting kind of lays into it, and it talks about how people get wrapped up in it by, you know, kind of feeling disaffected and finding this thing where they feel like they have a voice finally, in like the span of a couple, you know, three lines basically. So I like it for that. and I like that it does have this, you know, more positive message to it. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites at the same time.
Yeah, I absolutely love the title of Rehumanize Yourself. I absolutely love the sentiment to rehumanize yourself. I love humanity. I love humanism. You may hear more from me about this song later in the positive. It's not super high on my list. But listen, I'm going to break the spirit of the exercise a little bit. And I want to go back to One World, Not Three, because that's also going to be my King of Pain. Now, I do not hate this song. You know, I feel a little bit similar to you, Justin, in the sense that, you know, like, it's a little fun. Like, the lyrics are not bad. You know, it's almost like listening to a politician who I hypothetically agree with, but they have nothing interesting to say. But the reason I am picking it is my least favorite song on the album. And the reason it has to be this song, the reason I can't be cute and shift to another one, is all I could think of, or in fact, all I can think of every single time I listen to this song, is that we've talked a lot about what's the line between inspiration and appropriation. And we love some of the creative stuff the Police have been able to do with like reggae and ska influences, and I continue to love them for that. But this song just feels like they're doing a bad job trying to be Bob Marley. That's what I feel when I listen to One World, Not Three. I just kind of want to be, I feel like I can picture Sting and the boys listening to Exodus a few years earlier, like really digging it, really loving that vibe, really loving some of that political messaging of like togetherness and unity. And I was just like, okay, this is the point where I'm going to pause the album. I'm going to put Exodus on. I'm going to jam out to that. Yeah, it's not bringing the policiness. The lyrics stand out to me as particularly kind of like nothing lyrics. In our world, there's no time for sorrow. In their world, there's no tomorrow. Is a pretty like reductive way to capture like inequalities in the world. So yeah, that it's not an awful song. It's a well-intentioned song, and I appreciate where they're coming from, but it doesn't hit the depths of some of the other pieces for me.
Yeah, and they've actually talked about it like explicitly as a more reggae type song, and I think that's actually one of the reasons why Stewart likes playing on it. You know, the drums, that I think like the drums especially. But why don't we move on to some of our favorite lyrics, our da-do-do-do and our da-da-da-da. And for this, I'm going to actually go back to Randy to see what lyrics really stood out for you.
All right. I have selected E-O, 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 E-O. I'm just joking. I did not go with the E-O's for my favorite lyric. No, Justin, you set me up for this one. I'm going to bring us right back to Rehumanize Yourself. And the lyric is, Billy's joined the National Front. He always was just a little runt. He's got his hand in the air with the other cunts. You've got to humanize yourself. That is my top lyric. It's partly selfish, self-indulgence. I love taking a juvenile shot at just like, you know, extreme fascist, militant, far-right sort of ideology. It's a lot of fun for me to hear that. But it's also because as much as that is kind of an easy joke and an easy target, it speaks to a theme that's really important to me, like in life, in literature, that I think we need to understand the themes of this album. And when people do adopt like very violent, very, very segregationist sort of mentalities like that, like someone who would join the National Front, it really is just so clearly couched in this insecurity. And if I bring it back to the whole ghost in the machine concept, right, that idea that people want to disappear into something larger, and sometimes the only way they know how to do it is to bring others down with them. You know, I hear this line, and we're talking about the Troubles, you know, we're not talking about the United States. But I think back to the many years I was teaching The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And there's a chapter in that book where Huck Finn's father comes home drunk. He's kidnapped Huck Finn, and he just goes on this drunken rant and rave because he is so upset that there was this visiting professor of mixed heritage, and Huck's dad is so offended that this man could be an educated college professor, that he could have the right to vote in his home state, that, you know, Pap just says, like, you know, I went home, I shoved him out of the way, I'm not going to ever vote again if someone like that is allowed to vote. He's so insecure. He's got so little in his life. His only defense mechanism he can fathom is, I've got to try to, like, bring someone else down. And I wish, as a human race that was rehumanizing itself, we could all kind of overcome that need to, like, tear others down. So, yeah, I'll admit there's a little bit of a self-indulgent purpose behind me picking that lyric. But, yeah, I think it does kind of tap into the heart of this album as well.
And it's fun to hear, like, you know, all what he gets to rhyme with front, which is fun. So I'm going to go next with mine, and I'm actually going to go to Demolition Man for this one. And I like this particular, this is actually part of the chorus, and I love the way that Sting sings it as well. It goes, I'm a walking nightmare, an arsenal of doom. I can kill conversation as I walk into the room. I'm a three-line whip. I'm the sort of thing they ban. I'm a walking disaster. I'm a demolition man. I mean, there's so much going on here. You know, they talked about how this was a song that Sting actually wrote and was performed originally by Grace Jones. And I don't know if either of you have heard the Grace Jones version of this song. I know that they had heard it and weren't really big fans. Like, I think Andy even said, like, we always felt like that song needed to have, like, this energy and the kind of thing that, like, Grace Jones would do, but at least on this particular version, didn't really. It's kind of like a very stiff dance song as her version, which is very confusing, but I actually quite like the Police version. And these lines in particular, you know, I just love the way that the whole song, Sting is leaning into this guy's destructive tendencies. Here's somebody who is what you call a bad actor, in the sense that he is, you know, this is a malignant force, and he loves it. He's getting off on it. I love that you take that phrase, kill conversation, which usually means something pretty innocuous, but he makes it literal here because of the context that's around it. And then you've also got the line about the three-line whip. This I had to look up. Apparently, this is a UK Parliament term. I'm not sure if it's maybe applied to other parliaments as well, but I think it originated in the UK. This is a strict order for party members to attend and to vote a certain way in parliament. And if they don't, consequences will ensue. So if the guy is describing himself that way, that means this guy is not someone who will be denied. And if you do, it will be to your own peril. And then last, the walking disaster. And I just wanted to bring that up because this is a great example of, hopefully my high school rhetoric teacher would be happy with me. This is a great example of what's called metonymy, where you have one word that stands in for another. So it's not that he's Demolition Man, but also he's a walking disaster. He's not so much a person who causes chaos and destruction as much as he is the chaos and destruction itself. I just love that. That's a line. Like, honestly, that to me, this is like an iconic line of, I'm a walking disaster, I'm a demolition man. So there's so much going on here in the lyrics. I don't know. I just love that this is about this person who is almost like the Joker, just wants to see the world burn. you know, it's this is a pay into that kind of person.
Yeah, I also love the way that makes that sort of destructive personality so synonymous with politics, politicians. You know, that's a theme I'm sure we're going to talk about. You know, how do people misuse the halls of power? So that's really effective there.
But okay, so let's go to Chris for your favorite lyrics from the album, or some of your favorite lyrics anyway.
Yeah, I went to the last song, Darkness. Stewart's lyrics, I guess, but thought some really creative usage here. And I could make a mark if it weren't so dark. I could be replaced by any bright spark, but darkness makes me fumble for a key to a door that's wide open. The first part, I think it's interesting I guess for me, my interpretation is kind of Stewart reflecting on like his success and how there is, in some senses, like he wishes not to be famous. And like now that he has like is famous and has expectations, he feels like, hey, is someone else gonna come around and be that bright spark that will, you know, make me irrelevant? And unclear what the darkness is specifically referring to. I like to think of it as like kind of his insecurities. He's fumbling for a key that's already open. Like he's already has the success, but he still feels like he doesn't quite have it yet. So I thought it was a really cool way to say that. And I like the image of him trying to like open the door, and he gets to the door and he just stumbles in.
Yeah, I was actually considering this song for this category, Chris, so I'm kind of glad that you went with it. And I was struggling a little bit to parse those particular lyrics that you brought up. And actually, that makes a lot more sense now that you describe it that way. And, you know, but one of the strengths is that he's not super explicit with it. And, you know, I think that certainly lends itself to interpretation.
I also want to thank you. This was also a song I considered for my favorite lyrics. It was even on my short list for favorite song on the album. It's another one of those vibey songs. You know, I love Stewart Copeland. If I had gone with this for my lyrics, I was going to go with the section. I can dream up schemes when I'm sitting in my seat. I don't see any flaws till I get to my feet. I wish I never woke up this morning. Life was easy when it was boring. And as you guys know, I lack some of your talent for pulling out specific instruments and musical choices. And I'm always trying to make up for it with how I connect to television. And for another project, I've been catching up with a television show that I've missed for the last decade, which is Peaky Blinders. That's all I could think of when I was listening to this song. You know, that's a show that loves to take rock songs and put them into this context of the 1920s. And I was like, oh, man, you know, I would love to see Tommy Shelby on that show to some like rearrangement of the song Darkness, because he is always scheming toward how can he turn this opportunity into the next big opportunity as he gets knocked around and physically beat around and like hurts the people around him and destroys them. And there are so many moments where if he could just like hit the brakes, yet like fumbling around. So some of what you were saying there spoke to me, Chris. Cause yeah, I can tie this to literature, stories, meaning, purpose. Great choice.
Yeah. And I have to be honest, before, you know, I realized it, I guess I would have assumed this was like a Sting composition. It just has to me like all the hallmarks and feels like something that Sting would sing about. But I love that it's a Stewart song. So let's move on to our favorite musical moments. And I'm really curious where we went here. So let's go to Chris for this one. Where did you want to go for your musical moment?
I should return to one of the songs that you pulled the lyrics from, Demolition Man. I had read that comment about like them saying like, hey, we can do a better version of this. And I feel like they really added a really fun jazzy feel to it that I'm sure was lacking from the original version. And it was kind of the piece that like that you got to experience from like the first three albums that maybe wasn't as apparent, but definitely rears itself in Demolition Man. Andy and Stewart really shine in this one. And then even like I found out the bass was played by Sting's roadie, Danny, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Quattrochi. It's interesting that they kind of got even someone to play differently on bass, because I guess Sting was too focused on playing the saxophone. But yeah, I loved like Andy and Stewart just getting to shine on this song. A lot of great drum rolls from Stewart, and it felt like Andy was just improvising on the guitar the whole song. Like in between like the verses, he kind of is playing something different, and you're always like wondering where he's gonna go with it. So yeah, that this song definitely like stood out to me more. I feel like I didn't, because like the lyrics were interesting, where I was like really trying to pay attention to that on like my early listens, and then like as I listened to it more, I feel like I really got to experience like all the intricacies of a song. So kind of had that magic moment light bulb go off for me.
I think I want to say it's the longest song the Police have done. So it even like it lends itself to a more improvisation and feeling kind of like a jam session in a lot of ways. So I think it's, yeah, a lot of things that you're talking about, it's like the song kind of has space for that. They really allowed for that.
Yes. Speaking about it from my non-musician perspective, I had a similar thought here. I wrote, it's sort of like Andy on the guitar is having a conversation with the horns. Like, I love that little interplay in the song. So at 100% sign off on your take.
So, Randy, where did you go for your musical moment?
All right. Well, Chris was kind enough to cover Demolition Man. Chris was kind enough to let me talk about Hungry for You. You guys might make fun of me for this one, but it made my list, and I'm going to talk about it. This is a little bit cheesy, but again, my storytelling brain, for whatever reason, those very synthy, like dream sequence, wavy, like little intros and outros on Secret Journey really, really worked for me, especially because in other parts of this album, it feels like we're stopping and starting. We've got that kind of abrupt switch from Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic to Invisible Sun. And like we get just enough of those little synthy vibes that like I am ready for something reflective and different when Secret Journey kicks in. And I felt particularly tuned in to these lyrics about someone on a spiritual journey. And then we get to kind of fade back out of it at the end. And it's a little cheesy, but I'm going to give it magical status because it pulled my attention in a unique way. And, you know, it's coming a little bit after some of that section in the middle that feels a little bit soupier that Justin mentioned earlier, where it's all blending together in certain ways. And yeah, it really made me connect with that song. You know, it's definitely my top half of the favorite songs on the album. Really great track. And yeah, I think as cheesy as it was, they found a fun way to play with that, all those synthesizers.
Well, Randy, not only am I not going to disagree with you, I'm actually going to co-sign on that because that was my musical moment as well. The one little thing they did that was magic for me was, in fact, what I learned was actually guitar synthesizer played by Andy. And I noticed that in the credits. I didn't realize this was one of those moments that is really him, you know, playing that through a synthesizer. It's incredibly like... I think it's just a great example of like the atmospherics on the album. I'd just say the very first minute of this song where you've got those lush undulations on the synth guitar, almost like this secret world is being unveiled before our eyes. I mean, it's almost like an establishing shot in a movie or something, like we're like brushing past some foliage. You know, that's kind of what it feels like to me. And then just like you've got a little bit of the bass coming in, a little bit of the guitar coming in, the more classic type of riffing from Andy, and then very strong support from Stuart, especially the bass kicks. They really stand out here. I just think this is a great like mix of new and classic elements. And I did want to point out, I think it's quite amusing that somehow in the four categories that we did, we managed to not talk about Spirits in the Material World or Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic, but we can do that in a little bit. But I just think that's really fun. I think we wanted to spotlight some of the other songs. That would be my guess.
Justin, I also think it's fun how far we've come. We had a full reversal a couple episodes ago of our favorite and least favorite tracks. And now we doubled up on the same thing in two different categories tonight. So you never know what you're going to get on every pod you cast. And it's a good time.
Yeah, this was definitely like a song where, you know, I felt like the second half of the album is not as strong as the first, but I do feel like the last couple of tracks, like starting from Omega Man, kind of bring it back and, you know, make the case for the second half being better than maybe some other albums. But yeah, I really like, you mentioned, like, you know, magic, like mystical kind of feel to it. I thought that was really cool. And like maybe the theme is a little played out today, but I think it was, I still think, you know, it's prevalent that people tend to seek answers from others when they should be looking internally, which is kind of what I get out of the song. Yeah, it's fun the way they play off of like, hey, like I'm like, am I ever gonna find this thing? And then like kind of the answer to it, like it kind of gives the voice of the, you know, the wise man or the holy man, with like a lighter feel to the chorus, and like even like Sting's voice is a little bit higher. I feel like that's on purpose. Towards the end of it, it's like, you know, once you make the journey, you will be a holy man. You know, the theme of like, hey, maybe things are dark, but things can get better. Interesting way that when we dive into these songs, like, hey, they're not as ominous as they maybe originally sounded, or, you know, there's actually a lot of hope in the ominous sounding songs.
Yeah, for sure. I think that is, and that's something that, you know, makes this kind of interesting, given that it was really the true beginning of the splintering of the band. The fact that it's still hopeful, I think, really says something. But guys, are there any other songs that we didn't talk about that we would like to, for you, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're trying our best to give our listeners a deep dive into this album, but we've got to talk about Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. You know, as I've explained several times before on the podcast, Justin and Chris, you were kind enough to invite me into this experience with you, as when I came in as a police newbie. And, you know, this was one of three police songs that I already knew inside and out, upside down, really, really well. And I mean, it's incredibly catchy. It's incredibly universal. You know, like doing a deeper dive into the lyrics to prep for this episode. You know, it took me right back, you know, to my younger days when you have a crush. And I started thinking back to like weird little quirky things about, you know, people that maybe I was crushing on when I was younger that seemed so strange in retrospect. And the song kind of catches it. I suppose you could argue there, maybe that level of infatuation goes deeper than it needs to. It's almost like a nice, light, more innocent version of Every Breath You Take, which I'm sure we'll spend some time on in our next episode. But it's just a really fun, catchy song. It's wild to me that this was not the first single. It's just like, it's made to be a single. It's perfect in that way.
I mean, maybe Stewart and Summers had a say in it not being the first single, because they did not love the song and they tried their best to policeify it and ultimately settled on just, you know, adding on top of the track. They kind of like threw up their hands and they're like, all right, well, this thing's crap. We're just going to throw our stuff on it and, you know, the masses can make of it what they will. And of course, it's like the top song on the album from a, you know, popularity perspective. So I always found it amusing that like this really does feel like, you know, Sting's song, and just adds to the exasperation of Summers and Copeland that it was such a big success.
Yeah, despite the fact that I didn't choose it, it might be my favorite song on the album. It is one of them that I remember hearing the first time when I was very young and loving it then, and I've just never stopped loving it. I just every time, just like, this song is just perfect. It deserves all the plaudits that it's gotten, in my opinion. I love the energy of it. It's fascinating to me from a lyrical standpoint. When you actually look at the content, I do feel like it doesn't have the reputation for being a song that's about, you know, anxiety and romantic frustration. I feel like it's more about, like, people see it as like a song about being in love. And it is kind of about that, but it's probably more about like all the other stuff. I mean, it has more in common with a song like Does Everyone Stare, despite the fact that the music is quite different. I love that about the song. I feel like it really captures what it's like to have a crush on someone, both how that can be thrilling and also terrifying. I think it manages to capture that in the music and in the lyrics and the tension between the two. You know, the great line that I know Randy's brought up before about it's a big enough umbrella, but it's always me that ends up getting wet. I mean, I don't know. There's just like, again, it's that kind of like self-awareness of, you know, of our nervousness, of our anxiety, and yet our inability to necessarily do anything about it. I mean, this is not a song where he, you know, musters up the courage and finally calls the girl. Like, no, it's just living in the moment of these feelings. And I love that the song ends with this extended break, which feels kind of like a little bit of a jam session. You know, despite the fact that, you know, Stewart was not a huge fan of this, he has, in my opinion, like one of the best like mini drum breaks that he's done on a Police song toward the end of this song. I got to do the air drums to it every time I hear it. And then the great like keyboards and piano throughout the song, it's just like a whirlwind, and it's played so well by Jean Roussel, who I know that, you know, Andy and Stewart didn't like at all. But man, there's a reason this song is iconic, and yeah, it's fantastic. It is, you know, maybe the most upbeat musically on the album, despite the fact that the lyrics are actually kind of downbeat if you really look at them. But yeah, but that's something I love about the Police. What can I say?
Yeah, Justin, thank you so much for mentioning the big enough umbrella line. I'll save my deep dive into that probably for our culminating episode. However, you know, in our last episode, I went to great lengths to say how in the song Don't Stand So Close to Me, one thing I don't really like is like the pacing of it from like something dark and reflective to something light and airy and we're bouncing around the room doesn't work with the lyrics for me in that song. And it works perfectly here. Like the build up to those moments where you kind of jam out and it gets a little bit lighter. It really captures that there maybe is something beautiful in that lack of confidence. So yeah, great, 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 great song. I'm so glad we got to sneak it in here.
And of course, I would be neglectful not to mention Spirits in the Material World. You know, another song that I've always really loved, the bounciness of it. Apparently, Stewart called it the his most technically advanced drum part. Not because it was a lot of notes. He calls it very sparse. But he also said, I love this, his description of it. It's on the upside down of the back of nowhere. That's how he described trying to keep up with the beat. And I think a lot of that is because, from what I could tell, a lot of the like snare and bass hits are on the upbeat rather than the downbeat. So it makes it very confusing to try to keep up. And he's even said like when it's not just hard for him, it's hard for the other two as well. Everybody has to be in syncopation for this to work. Despite the fact that it's like kind of minimal, it's just getting the coordination of the band members together was challenging for this one. But that also kind of makes me like it even more. So,
yeah, I didn't realize this song had guitar on it. I'm sure this wasn't someone's favorite of the song, but yeah, I think it's a really good starting song. And the bass, as I got to hear it more, like the bass stood out more to me. It's pretty intricate, I felt like. So good to see Sting flexing his skills on bass. And then I got to mention the final song we haven't mentioned for my quick call out on Too Much Information. I think the... you know, the lyrics really capture or what captures the lyrics is just the general chaotic energy of the song itself. I think the a little repetitive in the lyrics, but it feels like you're bouncing around in between like the verses and the chorus. And actually there's a really cool part in it too where Stewart transitions from like the hi-hat to the ride cymbal. I didn't recognize but didn't like fully pick it up until like I was listening to it more, and it's like, oh man, that's a really cool part that I'm glad I picked up this time. So yeah, there's just little pieces of it that stood out the more that I listened to it, so wanted to give it a quick shout out.
Yeah, Chris, that almost made it into my lyrics as well. And I almost just went with the overkill, overview, over my dead body, over me, over you, over everybody. Because that, especially that over me, over you, over everybody, it's so broad yet so relatable. When like you're fed up, you're overwhelmed, you're frustrated. Who hasn't felt that way?
Also, like, this song really feels like it anticipated the internet. I mean, I was thinking about I don't know if my co-hosts know this song or our listeners know it, but there's a Bo Burnham song which is on his film Inside, where that is called Welcome to the Internet, and one of the refrains is a little bit of everything all of the time. And honestly, I think this song's kind of a predecessor to that one. Like, it's just, you've got everything in front of you and it's just like overwhelming, and you know, but also you don't really know what to do with it. Like, I just think I think the song is good for that reason. And it came out, you know, this album came out 81. So maybe it was anticipating certain things in the technological sphere, but certainly not the internet that we know about today. And certainly I don't think Sting could have anticipated Twitter or do I really need to call it X? I refuse. Okay.
If he wanted to like redo this song, it'd be too much bad information.
Yeah. Well, guys, let's move on to other artists we've been talking about. I feel like we've covered Ghost in the Machine pretty well, but let's hear about what other artists we've been listening to. And I think I'm going to start this time, and I'm going to go with, I've mentioned it before, but I haven't really chosen them for my featured artists before. I got to go with a metal band. I feel like it's, you know, a contractual obligation every time I do one of those podcasts that I need to talk about at least one. So I'm going to go with a band called Symphony X. They are from Middletown, New Jersey. That's right, Jersey's own Symphony X. You've got Russell Allen on vocals, Michael Romeo on guitars, Michael Pinella on keys, Jason Rulo on drums, and one more Michael LaPond on bass. They've been given a few labels in their career. They've been called symphonic metal. They've been called power metal. They've been called progressive metal. To me, it doesn't really matter what they are. They just really work for me. A lot of their stuff is very, very much about mythology, and a lot of the songs are epic in scope. They don't really write small songs, but that's part of what I love. There's a real earnestness to the music here. And, you know, this is a band where the lyrics are clean. In the sense that there's not the kind of like growls that you would get from like death metal, for example, but it's still pretty intense. I know Russell Allen is very much influenced by older heavy metal singers like Rob Halford from Judas Priest, Ronnie James Dio from his own band Dio, as well as Black Sabbath and Rainbow. So it feels like it's bringing together some of the more classical elements of metal. And at the same time, the music also like really shreds. I mean, especially Michael Romeo on the guitars, a lot of chugging, which is something I really love in metal, but also a lot of classical influence. You can really hear that on, honestly, stuff from the very beginning of their career to the end of it. A few songs I want to highlight here. I think a good starting place for anyone, especially if you're maybe not as into the more downtuned metal, song like The Accolade from their third album, The Divine Wings of Tragedy, is, I think, the first song I heard, and it really brought me into the band. It feels more like maybe like classic progressive rock in some ways. And it's again, very much leaning into the mythology. I've always said this is a band from New Jersey that seems to want to sing about anything apart from New Jersey. And another good starting place, I think, would be the title track from their Paradise Lost album, which is a really gorgeous, beautiful song, some great piano on it from Michael Pinella. Just like the kind of thing that I think even non-metal fans would be into. But the one song I really want to recommend, and this is if you are into more of the metal, you know, feeling that I am. This is a song that I almost think of like if someone were asking me to pick an official song for New Jersey, it would be this one. It's called Inferno, Unleash the Fire. It's from their The Odyssey album. And it's just a barnstorm of a track. You've got the more classical guitar on it. You've got some just great sort of classic metal type of riffing on it. Some amazing vocals from Russell Allen. He's really stretching his voice throughout the whole thing. It's just, really intense, really chaotic in some ways, but also very controlled at the same time. So, yeah, Symphony X, it's like, I don't know if it's going to be for everybody. Even if you're into metal, you might be surprised by just how earnest and sincere it is. They're not really cracking smiles as they're singing about, you know, Odysseus or Lucifer or, you know, the Knights Templar. Like, they're really going for it. I think they somehow, like, strike, like, they're not quite to the level of something like Manowar, which to me is, like, way overdoing it. I think they're, like, right in the sweet spot where they need to be, at least for me. And frankly, I wish that, you know, I have a lot of friends who are into a band like Dream Theater. And I would say in general, I'm a fan of that band. But I wish that they would also give a band like Symphony X a lot of credit, because I think there's a lot of similarities there. And yet they're also very distinct. But I just think they need more love. I wish more people would talk about them. And, you know, when we talk about Jersey bands, I think Symphony X deserves to be in the conversation. For the longest time, they were my favorite Jersey band. They have since been supplanted by the Dillinger Escape Plan, but that doesn't mean that from Morris Plains, but that doesn't mean that I don't love Symphony X just as much as I did. And yeah, I just think it's freaking great that there's a band from New Jersey writing about all the things that I mentioned about angels and demons and, yeah, and the Odyssey. The English major in me really appreciates that. So Symphony X, definitely recommend. They're a really good one.
Justin, I'm going to take your recommendation, because before that, as someone who's mostly only been in New Jersey in a passing through capacity, as far as I knew, the song of New Jersey was Stacy's Mom by Fountains of Wayne. So this sounds like a much better option.
Yeah, I'd say it's a bit different, but there is a lot.
That was Baby We Were Born to Run.
I mean, I think Bruce that's King. Yeah, I've heard like Living on a Prayer as another consideration. Just like Jersey has so much more to offer. That's what I like to say. Randy, what artists have you been listening to recently?
All right. I promise this is going to swerve right back to music real quick. But my favorite document to teach as an English teacher is probably Letter from Birmingham Jail by Martin Luther King. So we like to look at like some of the time period, some of the context, you know, why was MLK marching in Birmingham at that time, you know, fighting Jim Crow laws, etc. And as we're trying to get a flavor of the time period, a musician who I bring into the classroom at this time has always been Nina Simone, the performer and civil rights activist. Have you guys spent any time with Nina Simone in the past?
I have. I can't say I'm maybe not as well versed in her as some other artists, but like definitely I would consider myself a fan for sure.
Absolutely. So, you know, the song that made me like really fall in love with her music was, you know, probably her most famous song is called Mississippi Goddamn. And she wrote that, you know, just a few months after Martin Luther King was arrested in Birmingham. You had the murder of Medgar Evers that summer. And then in September, you had the Baptist Street church bombing with the four little girls, you know, a rallying cry of the civil rights movement. And the way she tells the story, she was so angry after that. She was ready to, like, commit an act of violence. You know, in one interview I read, she said she was, like, going to build a gun and just like shoot someone. But she wrote the song Mississippi Goddamn instead, performed it for a while. She would sometimes change up some of the lyrics to reflect more recent developments in the civil rights movement. And, you know, it was banned by many radio stations. You know, they would send the tape back, you know, torn apart because they thought it was too inappropriate, too provocative, too inflammatory. But to hear her sing it, you know, there's some different performances online, some different recordings, you know, you can pull off of iTunes or whatever. And she's got a beautiful singing voice. She's a really skilled pianist, but she brings this fire and intensity to the lyrics. And you know, it's really evident in something like Mississippi Goddamn. You know, she also, you know, really famously wrote a song called Why, which was a tribute to Martin Luther King after his assassination. But I've got to be honest, those two songs were my main exposure to Nina Simone. And this year I was teaching Letter from Birmingham Jail, and I was like, why haven't I listened to more of her stuff? So I started downloading a bunch of her music and listening to it. And in addition to all that stuff and some other great tracks of her own, she's got some really, really great covers. She did this cool riff on the Beatles' Revolution, where she's borrowing some of the constructions from the song, but changing up the lyrics and trying to put a little bit more fire, intensity, and responsibility into, you know, how you create change, which was really interesting. And just from, like, there's also just some pure pop fun. She has an amazing cover of To Love Somebody by the Bee Gees. To love somebody the way I love you. And I still love the Bee Gees version, but hers is really speaking to me. I found myself looping that pretty often lately. So yeah, Nina Simone, fire, intensity, fun, history, protest, civil rights, great experience for all. Check her out.
Yeah, I think I first learned about who she was thanks to a documentary actually called What Happened, Miss Simone? Which I'd actually recommend. And it gives you it's not just lionizing her. It talks about some of the more difficult aspects of her character that I think, you know, frankly, a lot of artists have, you know, undeniably like a huge part of American music and just a really fascinating personality. I know that she talks about, like in the documentary, she talks about how she resented the fact that what she really wanted to be was a pianist, and specifically a concert pianist, and that she was rejected by Juilliard, she thought, because she was Black. Felt like she never felt like her voice like was measured up to her piano playing, which I find interesting because her voice is so distinctive as part of her, you know, artistic persona. You know, I remember Barry Jenkins, who's the director of films like Moonlight and If Beale Street Could Talk, you know, in an interview saying that, you know, when he was writing, when he was working on the script for Moonlight, he was listening to Sinner Man, the Nina Simone song, like on repeat to kind of get a set. He wanted that sort of vibe in the film that he was writing, which I just really loved. And then the other thing I have to say, Chris, I'm pretty sure you have not seen this, but I don't know about you, Randy. The film Before Sunset, have you seen that?
I have not seen it, unfortunately.
Okay. I almost don't want to say then, because Before Sunset is probably one of my favorite films. And the end of it, I'll just say it involves Julie Delpy, who is one of the lead actors in it, along with Ethan Hawke, recalling to Ethan Hawke this Nina Simone concert that she went to. And she starts almost like playing it out for him. And it's just an iconic moment. Yeah, so Nina Simone has figured into a lot of great pop culture, but she's probably just worth checking out in her own right. It's just that's how it's happened to have filtered through to a person like me. But I really encourage people to go to the source, too.
Sold. And that whole series of movies is a big blind spot in my my pop culture history, so... Thanks for the tip. That might be the last push I needed.
Happy to help. So, Chris, I'm really curious to hear about what you've been listening to.
Well, I'm going to circle back to metal and talk about a band I was recently introduced to named Tear. They are a folk metal band with an origin in the Faroe Islands. They formed in Copenhagen, Denmark. Just before the 2000s, although they didn't release their first album, I think, until into the 2000s. They've had some band members come in and out, and I probably can't pronounce many of their names, so I won't attempt to. But the name Tyr comes from the god of war in Norse religion, which you may be familiar with. But yeah, as you can imagine, a bunch of their songs are centered around Viking lore, mythology, and history. They have a lot of songs in English, but they also have some songs in Faroese too. So I was introduced by a friend, and I'm planning to see them live next month. They're coming to my city, and I don't know that I'll be able to sing along on some of the songs in Faroese, but you know, they sound fun, and I'm sure some people will sing to them, so maybe I'll attempt to sing it like in Hungry for You. I'll attempt to sing French, even though I'll butcher it very badly. But I think one of their songs in Faroese is called Rayon Smear, something like that. Hopefully I didn't butcher that. That's a fun song. Some other good songs are Hammered and Blood of Heroes. Interesting view into it. And again, like I dabble in metal. I'm by no means like an expert, and I don't necessarily love all metal, but yeah, this was an interesting band to dig into, and I'm glad I'm going to see them in concert.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of them, Chris. I think I've heard maybe a few songs. I had a friend in when I was living in California who was really, this was like her favorite band. You know, it's interesting listening to them because there's definitely a lot of like what's called Viking metal in there, but there's also quite a bit of folk too. So it's an interesting sort of mashup. And yeah, it's a very unique type of sound. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that you're going to see them. I think that's really cool. All right, so I guess we'll wrap it up there. For now, why don't we talk about where we can find everybody? Chris, we'll continue to hear you on this podcast and on Podbrick Angels The Rush Hour, of course. But Randy, where can we find your stuff?
Thanks so much for asking, Justin. First and foremost, I've recently been working on my own new podcast project called Media/Lit, which you can find in most places where you get podcasts. We're pretty widely available. But yeah, the concept is my co-host, Chris with a K, and I, We dig into different types of media that mean a lot to each other and to our guests, and that's been a really great time. I'm also continuing to write stuff when they let me over at thepopbreak.com. I think when this episode drops will be a couple weeks past a global drop of the television show Bluey, and I have been obsessively writing hype coverage for that release, and hopefully when this episode airs, you can find my review of the 28-minute Bluey episode, The Sign, that aired on April 14th. So they're so good to me over there, letting me indulge my interests. And if you want to find me on social media, over on Twitter, I am Mr._Alain, A-L-L-A-I-N, and I've got links to all the stuff there.
Great. Yeah, and I know that, you know, I've just been very impressed with your input at the Pop Break. And I was recently talking to Alex, the podcast director, and he was equally impressed. So I think they're very happy.
Well, thank you.
And of course, we're happy to have you here. But you can find me at thecinemaverick.com. That's my website, where I actually just published my favorite performances of 2022. That's right, the movie year 2022. Yes, I'm aware that it is 2024. I just feel compelled to do it, you know, even if it's late and it's no longer topical. I put a lot of work into it, damn it. So I want to publish it. And I watch a lot of movies, and I want to showcase that. And I'm sure there'll be some people that, you know, you'll recognize from some of the Oscar films, and there'll be people from films you've probably never heard of, but should watch, in my opinion. So you can check that out on my website. And I will also have, hopefully by the time this is up, I will have my top 10 films of 2022 as well. I'm also on Letterboxd at The Cinemaverick, so you can find my reviews of other films that I've been watching recently. And I know I've mentioned it before, but I do promise that I will have my top 10s for other bands that I've been listening to. I have a few ready to go. I just haven't published them yet. Currently working on one for the Deftones and for Queens of the Stone Age. So those should be up. But more immediately, I anticipate Rush being the first one, given that I did a whole podcast on them. That was a little easier to do. And after that will be Nirvana. So and there will be many other bands to come. Mostly pretty random, the order that I decide to go in. So you can look forward to that. But for now, I want to thank all of our listeners. I guess this is our fifth goodbye.